How to Work on Global Issues for All Ages. And we thought we'd continue the hunger awareness theme from this noon and from the day and talk about working as families, working as people of every generation on some of the most important issues that face our world. So our panelists tonight are several members of the teaching staff, Emily Kirsten-Gripp, Joe Arnett, and Vonda Dyfeld. And we'll start it off with brief comments and then invite you all to jump in the conversation. Because that purpose of forums at Holden is just sort of lively conversation. That was the principle on which we started. And we don't need to agree, but we can share ideas with one another. Emily.
Well, this is fun because I know most of the people in this room because the people who aren't from my church, I met on the boat. We've been visiting off and on ever since, so this is very neat. When I was thinking about this, I thought about it at two levels. One is somebody who teaches people who work with children. I'm a social worker who teaches other social workers in the low-income community, Head Start people. But as I was thinking about it, I was thinking about it in terms of how do we do stuff with our own families, but also how do we help spread that out in our communities. And I think that the stuff we need to think about and that people, I think, have got some really nice examples of are, you know, looking at what your family can do that is appropriate for the ages of your children that will help make sense for issues for the ages of our children and for their personalities and all of those pieces. As well as being sure, though, that we don't sell our children short. Often it's, I know in our own family, we're doing church giving and not even thinking about the children's giving. You know, so like, oh yeah, you've got to put something, you know, here, have 50 cents, you know, as you go into Sunday school class or whatever. But to start thinking about that we need to be mentoring our children in the ways that we believe and the things we believe in. And so all of those pieces fit together. And the other piece is that, especially now with the 9-year-old, and I don't know how old other people's kids are, but the questions are getting a lot harder about why are people hungry, and what do we do about it, why don't we give money to the guy at the corner who's standing there with the sign. And it makes you really look at your own issues and your own questions again. It's sort of, oh, you know, where do I stand on this? And if you can use those times to open up that conversation and to make decisions and choices as a family about those things, then the children are internalizing it too. We all learn together. It becomes for all of us. And I'm just going to do one quick example from my family. And that is, we do two things in our family around hunger right now. Actually, we do three. The first one we do is just it's a family tradition of mine. My family, my father grew up in the Depression in southern Iowa, southwestern Iowa, and they were very poor. And they often went without enough food. And one of the things the family did was once a week, usually on Sunday, because they'd had a big meal, their bigger meal at noon, they ate popcorn for dinner. So when I first started growing up, we always ate popcorn on Sunday night. And we certainly weren't a family that was hungry, but that was just a piece my father carried over and didn't tell us about till we were older. Didn't say why that's why we ate popcorn instead of being just sort of, oh, it's family night and we get to have popcorn and a half a bottle of pop. My mother did everything in halves. She got half sticks of gum, half bottles of pop. But we got all the popcorn we wanted, much like a meal here. But I pass that on now into my family, that once a week we're not going to eat as much, and it matches with what we do here. The other thing is, because in our area, as lots of the folk in here from my community, there are the people on the corners when you pull up in your car with the signs. And my 9-year-old, who was 8 at the time, but was really starting to have some trouble with that. And I've always had trouble with that. I've never known how to make that choice. And what she and I did was we went down to a place in Portland that has, Sisters of the Road Cafe, is that the name of it?
Sisters of the Road.
Yeah, that's run by homeless folk for homeless folk, and they do stuff. But you can get coupons for meals there for free. So we got those, and then we also got a couple in our local hometown, too. We just got a couple of food coupons, so we had something to give. And it's really cool, because now she likes to be the one who gives it, because she rides right behind me, usually. She gives it. then on the more global level, we've just made a choice in our family. We need to be more intentional, and I'm really excited to hear what Joe's going to talk about. But talking about where does our money come from that we give, you know, what part of our budget does it come out of? I think our kids often just see us give. Mm-hmm. They're not going to internalize what it means to give if they don't know how we do it and how we make those choices. And it comes down to even talking about budgeting. But if we want our kids to do it well, we need to teach them. So anyway, go ahead. Joe?
Okay, well, thanks. I'm Joe Arnett. I'm on the teaching staff here for a couple weeks. And we each sort of had time to, we didn't really talk about what we're going to do. We each sort of just were given the charge of saying something about our own response to these kinds of questions and then hear what you have to say. So we don't always feel like I don't want to pose as some kind of expert, you know, like I have some great vision and idea. But when I thought about it the last couple days, about this whole issue of how to teach our children, I have a 7.5-year-old. The first thing that came to mind was that we really have to respond ourselves to the situations that we see. And one of those is hunger in the world. You know, hunger like we see on the street corner, the people we see around us. And then in the global scale, you know, we hear about famines in the world, or particularly people that, because of war, are removed from the ability to feed themselves. So the first thing is, well, how do I respond? You know, because I know that my daughter's incredibly perceptive, and she's going to respond by watching me. You know, so I'm modeling. You know, it's not like I'm telling her, this is what you ought to do. So I really think that in trying to respond to my own yearning to respond to the hunger of others, that I'm teaching her something just by doing that. And then, of course, I realized right away that I'm learning from her in how she responds, because she doesn't have all these rationalizations that we have. Or the sermon tonight I thought was terrific about the heart of stone, that she doesn't have a heart of stone. Mm-hmm. And she sees somebody that's being put down or somebody that's suffering, and it's like, it's this immediate response. Mm-hmm. And so I learned from that, too. I think that's a great behavior to follow and so to emulate. So that's one thing that came out of thinking about this issue of hunger. Just that sermon today, having human hearts instead of hearts of stone. So our particular response, which some of you might know the story about this, but we wrote this little book, my daughter and I, and you know, I did a lot of the writing, and it's in her voice, so. And then she illustrated it, so we made it, it's got some pictures in it. I'm not gonna read the story, but basically what the story is, we, at dinner time, when we say grace, we have our way of saying grace. We have a little bowl on the table that's, it's not empty, it has money in it. And every night we just try to put a little money in the bowl as if we're sharing our dinner with people who need. And there are many, but we don't see it as depriving us. We're very willing to share, and I think most people are. That's one of the things about hunger in the world. It doesn't seem like the problem is scarcity. It seems like the world food situation is abundance. But some people are not included in that abundance. And so we feel like just a simple act of sharing is something we can easily do. It's not hard on us. And then when the bowl gets full of money, we send it to relief agencies. And so for as a teaching thing for us to do as a family, we're trying to learn about why are people hungry. You know, why are people hungry? And also try to learn, what are people doing about it? Because people are doing a lot in the world. It's not like suddenly we're the first people to think, oh, there's hungry people out there, we should do something. There's tremendous efforts around the world to respond to that. So we're trying to learn what kind of responses are working, and how can we contribute our little bit, you know, to support those. So in the back of the book, we have some addresses of places to send money. We're kind of putting this out as a research project for us. We want to know some more places to send money. What's working in the world? What's working to help people learn how to, or be able to feed themselves again?
Which ones did you mention?
Well, I only have three. One is our local food bank. we live in Seattle or Bothell, and there's a local food bank, HopeLink. And so we've given money to them. And then the UN World Food Program. I have a friend who's one of my dears in the world because he's able to travel a lot more. He really likes the UN World Food Program. And so we give money to them. And Oxfam is the third one. So some of it's local and some of it's national. And, you know, our little bit is a little trickle, but it's responding, it's doing something. It's not just saying, oh, well, we always have the poor, we always have hungry people. Or all the great rationalizations. Oh, well, if there's not enough food, so it's either us or them. We're sorry they're hungry, but we can't do anything about it. We don't think that's true. That's one of the great lies that seems to be ruling us in. Maybe we've helped a little bit in the world, but we're also helping us be human, you know, softening that heart and responding to situations we're aware of. And it's really heartwarming. I can't tell the story without getting emotional. I'll try it, though, just out of respect to my daughter. She lost her tooth, and so she, you know, put her tooth in an envelope to the tooth fairy, and she got the Sacagawea dollar. And so she decided to put that in the bowl, you know, which is, that's a big sacrifice. And and this is in the book too, but there's even another layer when we're getting ready to send the money out. We add it up and count it, do a little math project, and then write a check. And she kept looking at this dollar, you know, thinking, well, you know, I kind of want to keep that, you know. And I said, you know, you can keep it if you want. It's really just, it's a voluntary thing. And so she said, no, she says, somebody's going to really be glad to get this. So she put it back. So I just have to honor her. So that's our kind of one thing we've done in our family, which has made us feel like we're becoming human.
I too have two children, two girls, 9 and 6, Carolina and Gabriela. And I always say that the biggest challenge for being a theologian, a pastor, professor, is to be able to convey all of that you know and translate it into the simple language of children, because that's where you really put it to test. And it's really a great experience, because I think that I've become a better person by being a parent. Also in confronting the fact that by having children, one is always in need of being so fundamentally honest about things and consequent. What you say is what you have to do, and they will be the first ones to point out to you, to say, well, that's not what you said. And some of the experiences that we have in our household, as you know, Brazil is one of the countries in which the disparities between rich and poor is really exaggerated. Not that Brazil is a poor country, to the contrary, it's a very, very rich country. It's as rich as the United States. But the way that this wealth is distributed among us is really the problem. Mm-hmm. And we have every day coming to our door, we have homeless children coming to bed. We have moms carrying their babies in their arms coming to beg for food. And it touches children. It touches them to see especially other children in need. And I think that is the most dramatic situation for our children to see. And the other day I was taking Gabriela, our youngest one, at that time she was 5, to go to the pediatrician, and we parked our car, and there was one of the homeless kids asking to take care of the car while it was parked, and I said, sure, you can look out for it, because then when we come back, he will get money for the work that he has done. And then Gabriela asked me, as we were already approaching, Mom, why is he in the streets? And I said, well, he's working. But shouldn't he be in school? She's 5. Shouldn't he be in school? I said, yes, he should be in school. But why is he working? And I I had this idea in my mind, it's like, maybe I shouldn't be the one explaining it. I said, do you really want to know? Let's go and talk to him. And it was wonderful. It was a great experience, because she looked at this other kid who was maybe 9 or 10, and she asked, what are you doing here? And he said, well, you know, I'm here because my mom is very sick and I have to buy medicine for her. And Gabriel said, and she was very touched, she was very moved by this whole situation, because a child's empathy with another child is much bigger than if I were to explain the whole situation to her. So, of course, we paid him and we said, you know, if we could help to buy the medication that was necessary. And then the following week, we received the news that a camp of homeless and jobless persons was going to be set next to this very large factory, this GM factory. And so, because in Brazil it's very popular, that very common that people will just set a camp to make out the protest and make themselves visible as a movement of the jobless and the homeless persons. And the students of the seminary were collecting, were gathering food, because these people had nothing. I mean, they had just come, they had no houses, they had nothing at all. And so they were gathering clothes and food and whatever people could spare. And so, of course, we gathered a whole bunch of things that we had at home, and we also received the news that there were many children in this camp. And when it relates to children, of course, they are, you know, paying attention, because they have this concern for the well-being of others. And then I asked the girls, you know, are there any toys around that you would like to send along? Because, you know, they would really enjoy having something to play with at this camp. And they said, well, why are they? The kids over there and their parents. And so we explained the whole situation. And then Carolina, the older one, she said, well, but you know, do you think that what we are sending is really enough? I said, well, it's not enough. We have to count that other people will help as well. And she said, well, let me talk to my friends. And then she started to organize this craft. They started making crafts, you know, like paper flowers. And they went out in the whole neighborhood selling these paper flowers and other crafts that they had made with their hands. And they collected a whole bunch of coins, because they were selling it quite cheap. And then they said what the cause was, that they were selling it because they wanted to help the children that were in this camp. Of course, people gave them even more. And then they put in their monthly allowance to complete it, and they wrote a letter. They wrote a letter to the kids of the camp, and they said, well, we are sending you this money, and we hope you can buy a lot of food with this. We'll be thinking of you, we'll be praying for you. Be well. And so they signed it and sent it off. And when the students who were doing the accompaniment in this camp, because many of our students were involved with organizing it as well, they said that it had been, the letter had been read in their devotion, because they had a moment of spirituality, and they were quite touched that the fact that the children had placed themselves in solidarity. And I thought it was a neat example of, you know, it's like how the capacity of organization of the children, if we are honest enough with them and just let them be themselves, and I think they come up with good ideas too. So, yeah.
Let's hear from you. You're a small group. Why do you say your name as you talk, and let's share ideas.
Karen, do you want to say anything about how you work on global issues through music and introduce the kids?
That's interesting.
In
I'm still thinking. I have four children ranging in age from 18 to 9. And it's so great to hear ideas. I think, I don't know if anyone else feels like this, but I oftentimes get very enthusiastic and then I'm doing a lot of things and then I go down to the bare minimum and then something spurs my, you know, passion again and I take off. And one of the things I've noticed, my children aren't, and I don't know why, but they've been less and less into stuff lately. This is a word that will show up in the play. So it's cracking me up because there's a bell that dings every time you say the word stuff during the play. I'm expecting it to ring. But one thing that they started to do on their own is, and this is Anne here, we work together at our church on these kind of projects. We're a church too, but we'd given money to have a project. And my boys, last year for their birthday, they just really didn't need anything. And part of the process was I really pared down their room to being a monastery. I mean, there's really nothing in there. I find that they don't play with anything unless there's hardly anything in it. So we just, it's basically, you know, we gave it all away to people who needed it. Anyway, but they started giving each other chicks and ducks and cows. And I showed them how to enter the website. This is another fun thing. That you can get onto the website and Heifer has a great actually connection to other sites that you can go. There's a site, I don't know if anybody knows the name of this, but there's a site you can go if you just type like something like global issues and darn it, and I don't remember because I didn't really talk about that, but it gives you like a list of 50 organizations, which of course I don't know if they're all good or not, but it links you into Heifer. And so my kids know how to do that and they can go in on their own. And the computer prints out a beautiful card of the animal that you're giving. So they get to pick, you know, do you want to do two rabbits, a duck, a cow, whatever, which is a great gift. And actually then one of my sons for his birthday sent out that he would prefer that. The kids that were coming for the birthday bought animals through Heifer Project to give to him. So he had a little tacked up, wow. You know, pictures cool. of the animals, which he was thrilled with and really, and they were giving them to Afghani people. In the fall, which was really a neat thing too, with after September 11th with all the animosity, it was a way for the kids to really talk through that. So that's my personal thing. In terms of music, with justice issues, I really think there's so much music that's good material out there. And one of the things I think we forget to do with kids is a song can be a whole lesson plan for talking through prayer, spirituality, Bible study. Even this week when I was working with the kids, the staff had said, well, we need time for our Bible study. And I took them aside, I said, what did we just do? And we had gone through the words for All in the Family of God. And I said, what is the place of Sheol? You know, what is that? What would be your vision? What God's vision? God had a vision. What does that mean, God had a vision? Did God envision Holden would be it? Would it be more? What is a family? Is this a family? And then every kid stood up and I said, "What? Tell who's in your family. Well, you have a cat and two moms and another sister. We have a dog and a grandpa." And, you know, I said, oh, so, you know, gosh. You know, this, and so I suddenly realized every line of many songs, not just mine, but you can take them apart and give them time for conversation. And all of a sudden, and you saw it the other night, when they're singing those songs, they know what they're saying. And songs are the way that, songs and prayers are the things that we, all of us, have memorized. And I always often think about feeds the soul. And that's the thing that I think if I was ever, you know, captured and put in a prison for 20 years, you know, like you hear people with singing these words to the hymns, and that's the thing that kind of keeps them going. And you realize that those words you're putting in people's hearts and minds, it's a very important, I mean, it's, to me, it's kind of a frightening job when, as opposed to giving a lecture, where you say it and people kind of take what they like and you give people words in their mouth, they're coming out of their mouth. You're forcing people to say something that you thought. And it's kind of frightening. You have to be very careful. And Anne, she's my word wizard. I often call her and I think there's no one else on the planet that would do this. And I'll say, now, if I said with or for, how would that change that? And, you know, I don't think anybody understands you do that with words, but you do. And, you know, it's very important. People are going to sing this over and over and over. And what are we teaching our children? So in picking out songs for children, And those of you who come to the show tomorrow night will see this too. Simple isn't always better.
There are a lot of amazing songs out there.
but they can say, and let's take your daughter as an example, they'll say anything, and they can learn anything, and their brains are this big, and so give them the words that are the right words for the things they're feeling and saying. You don't have to talk down to them. You don't have to. They can learn a bigger word. I mean, it's just as easy as the simple word for them. They're, so a lot of times with songs, I really write songs that seem too complicated, but they seem to pick them up just the same, and then they have them as adults, and I think they're truer, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're words that last a little longer for them. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, your music theater, though, also does a number of things. I mean, the kids grow up through the theater, mm-hmm. and so they may start out kindergarten through sixth grade as participants, but then they have a counselor in training period in middle school, and then they become counselors. And there are a number of them that have chosen to take their salary but then donate it to some mm-hmm. other cause. And every year, just about, you have extra money. Besides what is it, and she's been really generous. Some years the board just kind of decided where to give it, but I'd say the last 3 years, the board, the CMT board, has joined with the first project of our Sunday school program, and we celebrate the Children's Sabbath every October, which is through the National Defense Fund, and some kind of issue. And it's not a kid thing as much as it is for the entire community. And so we always do an education piece and a fundraising piece, and then a worship kind of piece to it. And over the years, I mean, we've done a number of different issues. Last year was violence with battered women. The year
and we
before.
Did that with little children.
And because they obviously everything's talked about age mm-hmm. appropriately, but kids know about anger, you know, and they know about forgiveness. And the first year was literacy, and we launched a library for home for transitional housing shelter, and they know about that too. And we challenged the congregation through them. There's a preschool, and the congregation, and then this music program. And I mean, we've just done a lot of and then the other one was a Montessori preschool. Needy.
For a very needy neighborhood where kids were coming for that didn't really have anything going on.
Right.
But the one thing that she does so beautifully, that's a real gift to the way this works for our families and congregation, is everything is so integrated. Not only is it a part of the worship, a part of the Sunday school, I bring it then in through my music program, and then she's sending home things that you can do individually as a family on a day-to-day basis to remind yourself of this, and devotionals, and it is. So when we hit these issues, they are hit hard,
and it's fun because every parent wants to know what their kid's into, right? And mm-hmm. so if you have this mission project for
through the kids,
then they know, okay, well, they're supposed to be raising money about whatever, but then they flip it over in the parent part, and then there's an adult piece talking about homelessness, or talking about street children through Voice of the Children in Russia, or talking about abuse. And then in Ramallah we did something in there too. And then the Christian perspective on it. So you educate, and then you bring in the Christian perspective on it. And then you have something, they always have something to go home with, whether it's a little box when we went to Mexico to put the money in, or it's the loaf, or it's a art project that's got a prayer hanging from it, or something. So then the parents have something that they do. There's something visual that the kids, sometimes it comes back, or it's just hanging there, or whatever. And,
but I think there's something about the integration process, I think, that we need to, that it's really important. And much like I was saying at the beginning, how, you know, you peak with a passion for something and then it kind of drops off. I think if when you take on a project like this, you do find a way to integrate it as part of the adult, as part of the kid, as part of everything that's going on. It means more to me if I know what my kids are up to and they know what I'm up to, and we can have a conversation afterwards, you know.
Well, how many of you have, one of the things I think that was a big step for Holden in terms of integrating was when, and it was after I was pastor, I wish we had hit the guts in the 80s, although I was wondering, reminds me the food was scarce then, but was to to have hunger awareness meal during the summer. I don't know, you lived here one winter, didn't you? And we did it in the winter, but there was this fear that when summer came, guests would be so angry if they missed a meal, you know, or had to go down to one thing. But I think the number of families I've talked to have said this has been really important for us as part of our summer, to have Thursday noon where we can tell our kids this is why we're only having rice and potatoes. On the other hand, there are some people who get angry about it.
No.
No, there are.
Is angry the right word?
Well, or who come here on, well, you know, there's not a lot of place to get food at home. So I guess I was going to ask all of you, do any of you do anything like this in your homes? Or your congregation's a meal that is demonstrating hunger? You talk about the popcorn in your family on Sunday nights.
Mm-hmm. And I think for us, you know, sort of it came from this old tradition that came out of necessity. But it's nice, I think, for our family to have that reminder that anyone can be hungry.
Right.
You know, because I think really often it's this other thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, your grandpa was hungry when he was a little boy.
That's
he was hungry sometimes. And neighbors helped each other. And, you know, all those wonderful stories then that go with it. But that sort of putting something more into it, because our kids often, I mean, I just am so, Wanda, I am so moved by going back to talk to that little boy.
That is an amazing thing.
It's just an amazing
and a brave thing for you to do, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's very brave.
But, you know, kids are wonderful. They're really wonderful. About gender stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's really...
Well, and the young man would never have answered the questions the same way if you had asked them either, you know? I mean, so it was marvelous.
I'm married today. One thing that came, well, two things come to mind that we've done through the church. We've done work trips to Mexico, building houses in Tijuana. And the first year, 2 years ago, we did this. And we invited this is where you build a house in 4 days. And then Amor Ministries is what we went through. They make sure the family owns the land, so the landlord can't just appropriate the house. Mm-hmm. That works very well. And there's a lot of good stuff that comes out of this. But one of the things in that first year was that we invited the family to come to our camp to have dinner with us. And only a couple of people spoke Spanish, although the kids really, who'd taken Spanish in high school and wouldn't dare speak Spanish outside their classroom, really got into it by the end. That was exciting. But then the next day, our final day at the house, when we were trying not to get all the stucco in, and these people for whom we built this house offered us lunch. They went out and they bought meat and tortillas and salsa. They had this gourmet lunch for us. Wow. And that night, our last night at the camp, we talked about what did this family do for us? Mm. We'd given them hot dogs or something simple. And there were 30 of us, and there were 7 or 8 of them. But then they fed us all. Well, first of all, we were a little scared about Mama's Famous Revenge. So we were careful about what we ate. But the fact that they went out and bought meat and probably a week's salary on us was very touching. And then the discussion afterwards was very, very effective. Mm-hmm. So to see... You know, these people weren't destitute. They don't have houses. They have Target or shacks for homes, but they're fed enough. But it was still an interesting discussion. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing through the Sunday school, again, it's an organization thing, we've gotten involved through our social concerns committee at church with a group of people in Africa, Bible school there. Mm-hmm. The students, some of the people from the church went to visit them in Africa, but to meet them so that we would know what they needed. And one of the things we decided was to send them money enough to buy some oxen so they could raise their own food, because they're part-time students and part-time farmers, basically. And that's been very interesting. And then we've continued that by writing letters back and forth to them. So, and the Sunday school participated in buying or in raising the money for these oxen. And again, what's an ox? Well, that's the first question you ask. And where is it? And you show the maps.
Yeah. Our first question is,
Are they going to eat it?
No. The point is...
It's a tractor.
Right. The point is, how about the tractor? How about the political piece? Vonda's story had the, certainly that edge to it where you were being part of a demonstration or a protest that was also addressing the larger...
the reasons.
Political economy kind of question. At what point and how do you introduce that one with kids? Or, for example, with... well, you mentioned Ramallah, and I mean that in the Middle East, it's our country's weapons that are making people hungrier. In Iraq, too, that was one thing that you and Linnea talked about with the Getting Bold story was that it was. Well, you talked about Afghanistan, that our war is making people hungry.
Yeah.
At what point do you introduce that with kids, and how?
That's a tough one, I think, because I think it's really important not to exclude them from our own turmoil over these questions, and I think we do them a disservice when we do that. But they are also able to handle some things and not able to handle other things. I think we try not to get into the. She picks up plenty about what the war is about, and so we don't go into that and the details of you know what people actually experience. We might say it's really bad. People have a hard time. We're trying to do something for them.
We have a Palestinian Christian whose father started the Hope Lutheran School in Ramallah, and he and his mother are members of our congregation. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we did was by age group, at elementary age and then middle school age and then high school, he came and he talked. Actually, and then the adults too. But he started with, what do you know? And I think that's always an excellent place to start with kids, is what do you know, and what have you heard, and whatever. And it gives you a very good idea of what's troubling them, where their misconceptions are, what they can handle.
Right.
So it always start there. And then it leads spontaneously into their questions. Mm-hmm. And you kind of know what to say and what to leave out.
That's
at
really
that point,
question.
and then in terms of response, they all have an idea, and so you kind of collectively come up, and so then we have three fundraising campaigns going on, because by middle school and high school they very much know kind of how they would like to respond, and they're very willing to deal and compromise with the group, mm-hmm. In terms of what would be the best effort and how are we going to help that and all of that, and then. So then we had, again, another congregational fund drive, as well as the kids doing their own in it. And then, and they also had a link in Ramallah with the Episcopal Church. And we have an Episcopal Church two blocks from ours. And so we picked up again in the education piece for Lent and did an education, and expanded the fund drive over to the Episcopal Church there. So again, unity across... congregations across denominations is coming because of this Middle East crisis. There's bringing a new unity here as well as our hope and prayers there. And then a devotional kind of book for Lent that went home for families to do. And then the school was trashed. And our pastor was fantastic in quickly getting an all-faith prayer service pulled together. So we had Muslims and Jews and Christians come to a late afternoon, early evening prayer service, and people standing up. Kids
it's a great
right there.
Format too. It was much like your prayer around the cross, where people just came up, grabbed a candle, stood up, and said their prayer, and then added it. It was powerful.
It was powerful. We had one high school girl get up and could barely speak because of what she knew now from that congregation and about them. And I mean, it was just incredibly moving to see the youth. Leading us that way and in tears over it. And then the other thing that only God could do, but our theme had been a light in the darkness, and the sun went down as we were all talking, and by the end of the prayer service, only the altar with all its candles was lit. Yeah. And it was incredibly moving, and we left in silence. But start where they are.
On that topic you were saying too about when to, I think one of the things we just, when you think of, sometimes when you get down to the bare bones of parenting, you think, what is really my job? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first jobs is to keep your kids safe, right? I mean, you think if you really get down to it, But one of the other things, when you're talking about what, how much you tell them, I always think, I really want my kids to question always. I want them to question everything and think. I want them to be thinking adults who don't just assume that what the government's doing is okay, that what the church is doing is okay, that what somebody says to them is true. And I think you can do that by what you're saying, you know, forcing them to learn how to articulate the questions that they're thinking. So it's not even so much that they need the information, because it's just like, you remember when you took those reference classes, they were like, well, you don't have to know all this stuff. You just have to know how to find it out. And a good doctor, right, doesn't know everything, knows how to find the information. And that's what you want to teach your kids, not to know everything or to really understand everything, because who does? But where do you go? And that it's okay to ask questions, and that it's okay to not understand what communion is, because does anyone? You know, or it's okay to be baffled by the world situation, or it's okay to cry for this person, but yet not be able to give money, because that's how I feel. That all that stuff isn't because you're a kid. It's because we're human, and we do have hearts, human hearts, and not hearts of stone, otherwise we wouldn't feel it. And that's okay to feel that pain, and that's okay to ask those questions. So part of it is keeping them soft and innocent enough to know that they can be wrong, ask dumb questions, ask smart questions, whatever.
I think another part of it is what those things that you can actually do something about. You know that saying, study what you can affect? Mm-hmm. It's like there's so much in the world that we seem to be powerless about. And that's what we have to trust God, because we can't change that. But there are some things we can change. So I think that what I'm aiming at is that one of the guides to what you tell them about is what can be part of their universe that they can respond to, you know. Because one of the hardest things about this modern age is we get bombarded with all these things that we can't do anything about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's a terrible automobile accident on the highway, and all these people are killed. Well, that's terrible, but I can't do anything about it.
Right, but you know, prayer is a response. And sometimes I think prayer is one of the only responses. When I think about the people in Africa, and when we were over there, we saw so many mission efforts. People had sent ambulances, and they had sent computers, and they had sent all these things that are sitting there with dust covering them, because they really never understood what it was that the people needed, you know. And it changed my whole philosophy of how we go about a mission project, or how we want to do something, that I want to find out what they need. Tell me something, articulate something that we can help with. And that's why we came back with the oxen. Where was I going with this?
Study what you can affect. Prayer is a response to things.
And that prayer is a response, and that sometimes I think that maybe just joining in that suffering, and that they can do that too. I mean, that sending the card to the shut-in, and that they do it naturally. Their friend fell over, and they're crying, or their feelings are hurt, and just sitting next to them, or hugging them. I mean, your presence and your prayers and whatever is powerful.
What are some views from Emily's congregation? You said that you know already for sure. What do you guys do in your congregation? Oh, I just kind of hear from everybody.
I know, but I don't.
We've have done some things with Heifer Project. That's a favorite. And it comes and goes. We've done a big congregational by the Ark, and then sat on it for a while, and then did the whole Sunday school, did chickens, and then we didn't do anything after that for a while. And
individuals,
you know,
in our congregation also give Heifer Project things as Christmas gifts.
Well, and that introduced everybody to Heifer, so
yeah.
There's lots of Heifer giving in our congregation.
Well, I got a sheep and a goat for my wedding. That was great.
Do you keep track of it?
Well, I guess I do.
I love the oxen story just because it's a, you know, I love the fact that one aspect of our modern age is we can have a relationship with a village in Mexico or Afghanistan. And that can really be a link to, a life-saving link to those, a personal link to those people.
Plus we also do the Mexico thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you do anything like a hunger awareness meal at all? or in your homes? I am curious.
We have, you've done some things with hunger.
We have taken the two-pronged kind of charity as one response and advocacy as another response. And our Bread for the World Congregation, and that means we help support them financially as well as with letters. Once or twice a year we have offerings of letters. And, a letter can mean, can be translated into dollars. And Bread for the World, for instance, has said, you know, here's an instance where if we take the number of dollars that a certain program got increased by, let's say it's the WIC program, and divided by the approximate number of letters that we know we've gathered across the nation, that's like $3,500 a letter.
Wow.
Now, how many individuals can go out and get us, you know, here's government, here's 35.
Letters are important because it's a way to take action that doesn't, absolutely, you know, that makes you focus. And that's a wonderful thing to do with children, just like, you know, Forrest did the other day with Amtrak.
I'm just curious about these. When you fast as a congregation or have a Hunger Awareness Day, is it clear that you're doing that in order to understand what it means to be hungry, not to give the message that in order for us to help people who are hungry, we have to give up our own food? Because that's a message I want to avoid.
Well, I guess I was thinking about the idea of being empty to receive God. You know, that my hunger is not really going to help that other person. I mean, yes, the money that I would have spent on the meal, and now I don't have the meal, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But in solidarity, I have this feeling of what it's like, but also now that just this idea of emptiness. And that we need to be empty in whatever way.
When my children first started, we fast a few times a year on certain days, and Ramadan, and then for Lent, and for just three, I think we have three set days we do. And now my younger ones have been fasting, and it's really hard. And the first time I kind of entered them in, I think Dane was maybe 10 or 9 or something a couple years ago, and he's this big guy, you know, have you seen him? He's kind of, he eats a lot. So anyway, so it was really hard, and it was, I think it was Ash Wednesday, and he had fasted all day, and he came home from school, and he was physically sick. He was getting a migraine, which he gets, and thought he was going to vomit, and he was just, probably hadn't drank enough, too, like they don't at school, and tried to give him water, wanted him to eat, wouldn't eat, and I was just trying to say, honey, you know, this doesn't change anything for everyone. We're doing this because this is why we do everything, right? It's not because we don't do the things that we do so that we get into heaven. We do the things that we do because the experience in and of itself makes us whole and makes us in solidarity with all creation, right? And so, you know, you can eat. This is okay. You've experienced what this is like, the memory. You've had all day a chance to remember people, and that's what I wanted to have happen. You to remember, and not for you to be sick. So eat. No, wouldn't eat. So finally, though, he could get started a little better, and we went to the Lent service, and I said, and I made this pot of chicken soup from scratch, which, of course, usually is like a meal. And we went to service, and I said, after communion, we can go home and have chicken soup. And they had planned a hymn or something after communion, which I hadn't said after the hymn. I said, after communion, we live a half a block away from church. So those kids went up and they had communion. They were ahead of me, and they just went down the aisle straight out the door. And I came out after, kind of, I was going to say, you guys, get back in here, the service isn't over. And they went outside, and the half block home, they were whooping and just going, and running all the way home, skipping, yelling, got him in the soup, and Dane put one bite of that soup in his mouth, and he just started crying. He said, I know why I do this, so I appreciate how good this is. And oh my God, you know, he hates chicken soup. and you know, but that is part of why we do it, right? And that's why we simplify all the time, because we can't see through the stuff for the goodness. And you take the stuff out partly for you, you know?
That's a great.
So anyway, but I love that, and he's very enthusiastic about fasting now. At that point, the feeling, and I think it's one of those, you know, when you have a mountaintop experience like that, which this was for him, then you want to do it all the time. And he's like, let me do this once a week. This was great, you know, you know, fasting once a week is this, but the hunger awareness you can do once a week easily.
I'd like to say something about the Heifer Project. It's not anything really recent. It was started after World War I to help feed the hungry in the war-torn areas in Europe.
Really?
And it was back in the 40s.
Wow. 1940. World War II.
And, World War II.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Wow, that's great. That is so funny.
Not now. It isn't confined then just to heifers, in order to send heifers over there so that they could breed them and raise the livestock for the countries of Europe like Denmark and the Netherlands, who were devastated by the war, maybe in France.
So it's more than 50 years old.
I'd like to remember that I came up in a different age than any of you. I went to Sunday school in the 1920s, and I still remember taking my little pennies or nickels to Sunday school, and when I dropped them in the offering plate, we'd sing a little ditty. Dropping, 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 here the pennies fall. Everyone for Jesus, he will get them all. You'll remember it.
Sure. Right. Well, thank you. Well, I'm going to play moderator here. We usually do try to end on time. We started a little bit late, so I'll give you the, say, 2-minute warning here. Anybody have any more they want to say? Emily, you had something.
I was going to start a whole new thing, so it's probably not a good time.
Well, start it. It can continue on the street.
Well, I was going to respond to what you were saying about, you know, when you see in Vancouver, people, and we may have already been in this same debate, but people are on all around our church. There are people on the corners, and downtown Portland, there are especially teenagers all over, like on my way to the theater, from the parking garage to the theater. And I think that there is no way to justify, to children especially, and that's the honesty, of not giving. I think there is no way. And so, and to try to say, oh, well, there's some that there is some justification, does them a disservice. And so I find myself giving every person, if we stop, if we're just going by, we don't necessarily stop, but if we stop where they are, it's a dollar out the car window. And going in Portland, if I'm going to happen to be around the square and around where that is, I try to grab a whole bunch of quarters and put in my pocket, and that quarter's not a lot, but if you're asking everybody that comes by, or if you realize there's a whole bunch of people sitting there, and you can't just give one a dollar, so a quarter down the line to everybody. And I just think that you almost have to do that.
You go on the wrong streets, I haven't seen that.
One problem is there's never, I mean, at what point do you, you know, I guess the thing I always struggle with is, you know, if the rationalization then is I only have to give if I stop. So I only have to give if I'm really right there. Or there's always, we're always having to come up with some rationalization because I'd always have more. I probably have, you know, I mean, well, do I give them a dollar? But what if I only have a $5 bill? Do I really need a $5 bill? You know, that's 2 lattes in our town. Yeah, you know, I mean, exactly. That, you know, so it just, the food part worked for me just because
it's a good idea.
This is a real need that I know I can do. I can have them with me. And so that's why I did that. But I agree with you. I mean, I've always struggled with that. I had somebody once just
as a teenager, I was given a church offering envelope as soon as I had a job. And my first job was delivering papers. For 15 cents a week.
Wow. You know, one tradition.
Being part of that in the envelope.
One tradition in our family that I just love and I think it's really important. We keep talking about these kind of global things. Mm-hmm. One of the most important things I want my kids to see is that I will disrupt my own life for a neighbor who needs a meal, and I will disrupt my own life to give somebody a ride. And I, you know, those kind of things are important too. But one thing that we do, and this is probably super trite, but it's so fun. On
on Christmas morning and on Thanksgiving morning, we bake cinnamon rolls and a whole bunch of cookies, and we take hot coffee and we bag them up, and they're my best ones. And we go into San Francisco, or actually Thanksgiving morning, we go into our town and dump at the bus station, and the kids will all get out with hot coffee and cups and cider and cinnamon rolls, and just say Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving, and they get a face-to-face contact and handing somebody something. And we've gone down into San Francisco caroling to the homeless people and giving them treats. And they're so responsive and thankful and love it. And we make this little decor. The kids spend all this time decorating cookies and stuff. And it's trying, and it doesn't help. But you know what? It's a great way for them to touch somebody. And we have homeless dinners at our church, and they serve there. But those people are homeless, not like homeless people, because we see them all the time, and they're like neighbors. They're hanging out in the neighborhood. But to go down into the city where it is a person they've never seen before and touch their hands and hand something back and have them just say, oh, this is so dear, thank you. And my kids just, you know, it's that is a really rewarding experience. And not that you should only give because it makes you feel good, but when you're teaching children how to give, it's not a bad thing to feel good about the process of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, everybody. Monica, did you have anything more you want to say?
Well, yeah.
Great stories, yeah.
Yeah, it is really powerful.
Good ideas. I've been writing things down.
Oh, thank you. There's Compline in here at 10 if anybody wants to stay for the late event.